Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. The Pistons lost to the Grizzlies last night. And it was a little bit of a different type of loss, though. One reason, the Pistons played hard, seemed pretty satisfied with their effort. Not the result, of course, but there was not as much dismay. At least that was the feeling after the game. And it was a little different because the Pistons had the same starting lineup after Stan Van Gundy vowed to change it. Van Gundy would not reveal for a while what he was going to do, and he gave at least one side of it before the game. He said he planned to start John Luehr. He didn't say whether it was for Tobias Harris or Marcus Morris. My guess was it was for Tobias Harris. You can listen to yesterday's podcast for some more analysis on why that guess was, but I could see either way. Definitely could see either. But he said John Luehr would have gone into the starting lineup, except John Luehr got into a car crash yesterday morning. Thankfully, John Luehr is okay. According to Luehr, everybody else involved is okay. So that's the most important thing. That's good. Luehr even played off the bench. We'll see whether he plays tomorrow against the Warriors. These types of things, I definitely wouldn't be surprised if he's more sore today and maybe even tomorrow than he was the day of. But he was good to go against the Grizzlies, but he missed the morning walkthrough. And Van Gundy just didn't feel comfortable changing the starting lineup on the fly without the walkthrough to where, you know, there would be no opportunity for Luehr and the other starters to practice together yesterday. So Van Gundy is stuck with the same starting lineup: Reggie Jackson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, and Andre Drummond. Didn't get the win, but that starting lineup was +2 in 14 minutes. So the question is, what's going to be the starting lineup against the Warriors? And Van Gundy talked a little bit before the game about how he decided to start Luehr. I think this is revealing.
It's long-term things anyway. It's not a one-game thing. I mean, we don't change the starting lineup after every loss, you know, or anything like that. So, when we don't get overly excited after every win and then go a different way. Oh, this guy played well. We're going to play him 36 minutes. No, I mean, it doesn't work that way. You evaluate things over time.
Given that, and keep in mind this was a pre-game discussion, was there anything Van Gundy thought he might see against Memphis that would convince him to stick with the starting lineup he'd been using, or was there just not enough that could happen in only one game?
There's probably two things that could happen that could change that, but we'll see if they do. So
what those two things are?
No.
And that ended Stan Van Gundy's pregame press conference. I didn't have a chance to ask him after the game whether he saw those two things he was looking for. My guess is no. My wild guess to those two things, by the way, better ball movement and better defense. There were those two things in glimpses, but maybe definitely, I would think, not to a sufficient level where if you thought starting John Luehr was the appropriate thing, that would reverse it. Because like Van Gundy said, you have to make these decisions over the long term, over a larger sample. So I'm going to expect a different starting lineup against the Warriors tomorrow. We'll see how that actually goes, but that is my expectation. But I do think this game was very good for the Pistons getting on the right track because of how they responded to it. Not the prettiest game. The Pistons shot terribly, 36% from the field, 26 on three-pointers. That's not going to get it done. It's really hard to win that way. But things that are probably more in their control, they did a better job of. They cleaned up on the glass. They dominated it in rebounding. They defended pretty well outside of Marc Gasol, who had 38 points on not many shots. He was just dominant, making some tough shots, too. They even defended him well. They defended everybody else effectively. They just defended Marc Gasol well. He might be the best center in the league. I think I'd go with Anthony Davis, barely edging Gasol, but they're both right there. He's a real load to stop. He's added a three-point shot to his game. It makes him so much more dangerous, especially because of his passing ability. When he pulls Andre Drummond out to the perimeter and then can hit cutters on passes going to the basket without Andre Drummond in the paint to protect the rim, that's so tough. It's so tough. Gasol is so good, and he beat the Pistons. I mean, there wasn't much else to it. Because everything in every other way, the Pistons sort of handled their business, and they seem to have an appreciation of that afterward. And my big concern was with this team is not that the Pistons are so bad or so doomed or in such a hopeless situation, because I really do think once Reggie Jackson gets healthy, things will start to turn around. He'll be able to get more separation off the dribble, which will lead to more passing lanes, which will keep his teammates involved more. Everybody will be a little happier. The team will be winning. Everybody will be even happier. The team will win more because everybody's happy, and it can just snowball. I think that was bound to happen in the normal course of events. The worry is that everybody's getting so frustrated by this losing stretch, by this lack of ball movement, by this bad defense, that guys were going to turn on each other in a way that might not be so easily reversible, that there would be some real hard feelings that they'd have to overcome later when they're capable of winning, when Reggie Jackson is healthier and more recovered from his injury. So I do think it's good that the vibe to me, just as an outsider, not claiming expertise on this, but to me, the vibe in the locker room, the vibe from Van Gundy, everything afterward, just seemed a little bit more satisfied with how things went, even though it ended in a loss. So that bodes well, I think, for the future of where this team can go once everybody's fully healthy and fully acclimated, especially because it seems like they towed the line of an appropriate response of not getting too excited about playing hard and winning. Here's what Andre Drummond said.
No, it's not. I wouldn't call it a positive. I think that's what we're supposed to do on a nightly basis. We're supposed to come out there and play like that. I wouldn't call it a positive. It's just we're here playing. We're doing our job. We're supposed to play this game at 100%, play as hard as we can at all times. And, you know, we play hard today. We play really hard. Obviously, you know, they got the best of us. We got to move forward.
You don't want to get in the habit of being happy with moral wins, but the Pistons needed a moral victory. That's where they were. Their psyche was down. They were messed up. This, I think, was a moral victory. It's a pretty weak moral victory. I mean, to get beat by the Grizzlies, and not that it was a super competitive game. The Pistons lost by 12. They only had moments of challenging the second half. The Pistons' effort was not good in the first quarter, but it picked up from there, especially defensively. So this was a weak moral victory as far as those go, and those are already, by definition, a pretty weak thing. But this Pistons team needed one, and that they're taking it as one, I think, is a positive. That's what they needed for their mentality. Also yesterday, Hall of Fame nominations came out. Ben Wallace was nominated. Tracy McGrady was nominated. The other first-time nominee former NBA player through the North American Committee was Muggsy Bogues. Clearly not a Hall of Famer. Really cool player making the league and flourishing at 5'3". And then two former Pistons, Ben Wallace and Tracy McGrady. Should they be in the Hall of Fame? I got to put out this caveat here. I try not to talk about who should be in the Hall of Fame, who deserves it, who doesn't, because it's a basketball Hall of Fame. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It has such arbitrary and ridiculous standards. There's too much credit given to excelling on lower levels. College success counts as much, if not more. International success counts as much, if not more, than NBA success, even though those levels of play are easier than the NBA. This is especially true of coaches, where college coaches have such an easy time getting in. Referees get in at an absurd rate. If you referee a long time, you're going to make it. There's not really a standard of, wow, maybe some referees refereed a long time and weren't actually good. Now, it's such a weird conglomeration of people who get in that I've just got to remove myself from it. There's no clear standards. I don't like how it operates. I don't like the process, but I'm going to indulge for a few minutes on Ben Wallace and Tracy McGrady, two former Pistons. They both, to me, are borderline calls. Ben Wallace, I think, was very underappreciated at his peak. I think at his very best, he was the third best player in the NBA. That was around the time the Pistons won their championship, and maybe slightly before that, too. His peak. He was behind Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. This was when Shaq was between eras of being motivated. This is when Kobe wasn't at his full force yet. This is pre-LeBron. This is before Nash really was unleashed by Mike D'Antoni and took full advantage of his skills. Ben Wallace, to me, was the third best player in the league. He was so impactful defensively, more than most people realize. He could guard. I saw possessions where he guarded all five opponents on the same possession because his ability to switch was so incredible. He could protect the rim. He could hassle opponents on the perimeter. Awesome rebounder. And very underrated offensively. Offense is not just about scoring. Offense is about setting screens, which Wallace did excellently. It was about passing, which he was underrated at. Pretty good passer for a big man. And most importantly, he didn't miss a lot of shots in this era, especially. He knew his offensive limitations and played within them. It's the offensive players who miss a lot of shots, who turn the ball over a lot, who harm your offense. Ben Wallace was mostly happy to stay off to the side, again, in this era, to stay off to the side, to set screens, to keep the ball moving, to clean up on the offensive glass. Offensive rebounding is another important part of offense. And so Ben Wallace did all those things well. Just because he didn't have huge scoring numbers, don't diminish how good he was. However, his peak did not last very long. Even by the time he left the Pistons, there were signs of decline. There was some trouble with his ability to defend well with the Bulls. And yet, yes, he had that nice renaissance at the end when he came back to the Pistons. He had that very nice year. He was the Pistons' best player, which said more about them than him, but said something about him. Ended up playing a lot of years. I just think maybe after his peak with the Pistons, too many of those years were not quite good enough to feel great about those years. That's why he's a borderline call to me. You think he belongs in? I can see it. No big argument. You think he belongs out? I can see it. No big argument. All right, Tracy McGrady, the other Piston on the ballot. McGrady obviously did not spend much time with the Pistons. What he did with the Pistons does not have much to do with his Hall of Fame case. What he did against the Pistons, though, that's something that I think deserves a little bit more digging. McGrady, at least as far as the Hall of Fame is concerned, never won a first-round series. There's sort of a funny thing going on with McGrady. He signed with the Spurs a few years ago on the last day of the regular season. He didn't play in that regular season game. He played a few spot nothing minutes in the playoffs. The Spurs went to the finals. That was the only time he advanced out of the first round in the NBA. If that season counted, based on the Hall of Fame's rules, he would not yet be eligible for the Hall of Fame. He'd have to wait one more year. Instead, the Hall of Fame says it's okay now, which means that year with the Spurs didn't count, which means McGrady never won a first round series. He had some close calls with the Rockets. And of course, the series I want to talk about, I'm guessing a lot of you remember, I was 2003 Magic Pistons, and McGrady's Magic, as the 7 or 8 seed, built up a 3-1 lead over the Pistons. McGrady said it feels good to get into the second round, and then the Pistons came back and won that series. Tayshaun Prince really hassled McGrady after not playing much in the first four games or the regular season that year. Came in for Michael Curry, made all the difference. That was the start of Tayshaun's ascent into a very good NBA player. And that's sort of the problem with McGrady. Excellent regular season player. If we're just comparing regular seasons, he's a clear Hall of Famer. His lack of playoff success, though, is stunning. And you know, he didn't always have the best teammates, although I think he had at times better teammates than given credit for. This Magic team probably is not the best example of that. His supporting cast then was pretty weak because Grant Hill was injured and taking up a bunch of cap room. But in Houston, he had some good supporting players, including Yao Ming's, who is a Hall of Famer. Again, you want to hear my complaints about the Hall of Fame. Yao Ming gets in through the International Committee. It's like a separate category because he happened to be from China. It has nothing to do with whether he's deserving or not. That's another borderline player based on deserving on-court merit. But based on the fact that he's from China, it's a different, easier path to the Hall of Fame. So McGrady, his lack of postseason success is pretty stunning. Yeah, he had some nice individual numbers, but if you watch those games, he just never could put it together in a way to carry his team. When he put up big scoring games, the passing and or defense wasn't there. He just could not be that complete package player ever in the playoffs. Not once during his career that would make you go, yeah, that looks like a Hall of Famer. He had some excellent games and played like a star, but never once in his long career could he get a team out of the first round. That's a low bar for a Hall of Famer. He never cleared it. But because he was so good in the regular season, I do see him as a borderline candidate. I would probably put him in. I think he has a little bit of a stronger case than Ben, just because of how good he was in the regular season and for how long. But they are both borderline to me. Another borderline candidate with Pistons ties is Tim Hardaway, who's on the Pistons coaching staff, who Stan Van Gundy coached with the Heat. And Van Gundy, at his pregame press conference yesterday, unprompted, brought up Tim Hardaway. And I just got to set the stage. This is rare. You know, Van Gundy and a lot of coaches often don't make opening statements at a post-game press conference, but sometimes they do. They never do at a pregame press conference. They're there to answer questions. But Van Gundy went up and just immediately started talking about Tim Hardaway. And that's where we're going to close today, Tim Hardaway's thought, or Stan Van Gundy's thoughts on Tim Hardaway as a Hall of Famer.
We got to get him in there this time. I mean, it's all I know is this, right? So he played on two really good teams in Golden State early on. Two guys that he played with are in the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so, Chris Mullin and Mitch Richmond. Tim was the best player on that team. And then in Miami, he played on really good teams. Alonzo's in the Hall of Fame on that team, deservedly so. Tim was the best player on that team. I was there. So you're the best player on two good teams that has Hall of Famers going in. How can you not be in the Hall of Fame? It's mind-boggling to me. So hopefully this year's his year, because he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I think one of the criteria in any of the Halls of Fame, right, is when you're playing, you have to be, you know, at the top. You know, you should be. It's not just how long are you good, but are you really at the top? And I know when we had him in Miami, I mean, the guy was first team all NBA, you know, on team winning 60 games. I mean, he was, Alonzo was a big part of it too. It was both of them, but Tim was the guy everybody prepared for offensively and everything. I mean, he was the guy. So there's no question to me on what he did on those two teams, that he should be in the Hall of Fame and deserves to get in and not come up short again.
I asked Van Gundy about Wallace and McGrady, and he said he's rooting for Wallace as a Piston guy. I'm not even sure Van Gundy remembers that McGrady spent that year with the Pistons. That was in a time when nobody was paying attention to the Pistons, or McGrady for that matter. But he said he is rooting for Wallace, and whether they deserve it, he said he hadn't dug all the way into it, didn't really feel qualified to offer an opinion, but had been around Hardaway, had dug into that one, and felt comfortable offering an opinion there. I guess I sort of have the opposite perspective. I need to dig more into Hardaway. Maybe I'll do that for a future podcast. He is a Pistons assistant coach, and offer my take of whether he belongs in. He is definitely another borderline call, but on the edge of in or out, I'd have to dig into it more. Van Gundy obviously feels strongly, and he's loyal to Hardaway. Pistons play the Warriors tomorrow. We'll look more ahead to that game tomorrow before. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at DanFeldmanNBA. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Paul. Verizon has been placing giant letters all over the country to get people to buy into their unlimited plan. Don't get hooked. Switch to Sprint Unlimited, $22.50 per month per line for 4 lines and get the 5th line free. Hurry to your local Sprint store, visit Sprint.com/unlimited, or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 today.
Savings until 10/31/18, then $38 per line per month for 5 lines with auto pay, excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, streams, you PHC 1080p, music to 1.5 megabits per second, gaming up to 8 megabits per second, subject to credit, $30 activation fee, prohibited network use, tools, and data deprioritization apply. Compared to Verizon Beyond Unlimited, carry features, different coverage and offer not everywhere, restrictions apply.